Beloved listeners, welcome to Advanced Living Radio. This is your host, Kenneth Lesser. Oh, yes, get ready. Oh, you want juicy fun, you want good information, you want your life to be better and have a good time while you're doing it. Well, guess what? You've come to the right place. We have a guest today that is going to just add a sparkle. And you know, we're here to make your life better. I pray, Heavenly Father, show me the best ways to have the most fun, inspiring the largest number of people to naturally, easily experience vibrantly, exquisitely, healthy, wealthy, passionate living. Mm. How soon? In the shortest amount of time, with the least intrusion into their lives. Why? So we get to enjoy a global loving community. Yes, better parties with more people. Mmm, yummy. Well, guess what? Today, our guest, Heather Astai. There we go.
Okay.
We're going for actually correct pronunciation, at least during part of the program. Heather is just...
That's my ex-husband's last name.
Oh,
so
there we go.
I just say, gosh and golly, it's so sorry. Not my fault. So you did fine, Ken.
Well, our dear friend Heather grew up in Denver. And as she likes to brag, never quite matured. And she's using this to her advantage. Now, we're coming into a time with baby boomers and people where life is changing so rapidly and we have to make a lot of changes and adapt. Well, Heather is here to show us. I mean, she has done an amazing job of reinventing herself. An extensive career in real estate, graduated from Stanford with a degree in psychology, and she had, of course, a simplified version of psychology, which is simply just get over it and get on with it. Well,
actually does not make you much money, I think, in the psychology realm. I think that would have been a big mistake.
There you go. So, well, Heather, just want to just have you join right in because we've got so much fun to share, and
well,
just want to welcome you.
I am totally credentialed to be talking about middle age because a couple of years ago I became viable for the senior citizens menu at Denny's. You know, I could order off that menu that always sounded so good before you're 55.
Mm.
So I'm right there. I'm with
us.
So I'm qualified. I'm not talking about middle age from a non-middle age perspective.
Okay.
We're right in the middle of it.
Aha.
And I am enjoying the heck out of it.
Well, see, this is important. I mean, mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about your background of what would have been kind of like more normal types of things, and then you obviously have made an important transition without actually leaving your body.
Well, though my body took me there. Actually, I have to say, my body led me there. I was my career was mainly corporate real estate, commercial real estate. And the last couple of years that I did that, I was traveling a lot, and I had some very high-profile clients, and, you know, we were really top of the line, but I was burning out. It's not that I didn't enjoy the work. I didn't like the politics, and the travel was killing me, and I knew I had to do something. I could feel the stress. But I couldn't figure out, I lacked the imagination to make that next move, to tell you the truth. I couldn't figure out, how could I make the same amount of money, or could I live without the same amount of money? What am I qualified to do? I had all those questions, so I just didn't make the move. So my body led me into it by my back going out.
Oh.
It completely laid me out for a few weeks, and that was the period when I was able to make the change because of that. I firmly believe because of that, that it was perfect and meant to be. So what happened was I had the night before my back went out, I'd been fooling around with writing some humor, a novel, but I had never done this before, and I had sent the first chapter to my older sister, who I've always believed is my worst critic.
Mm.
And I don't know why I did that, Ken. It was just, you know, my brain went on freeze, and I emailed it to her, and afterwards I thought, oh, my gosh, what have I done? That's awful. So that was the night my back went out. The next day, I'm curled up in fetal position on drugs, you know, Valium, Vicodin, whatever V drug I could get my hand on.
Okay, well, let's all take them if you got them.
Yeah, if you've got them. And I could not move. I literally couldn't move. So my older sister calls me back, and she says, Het, it was great. I loved it. You've got to keep writing it. And I'm lying there thinking, I can't move. I can't move. So I whined a little bit, and she said, well, just lie there and think about the characters and think about the dialogues. And that's what I did for a good 3 weeks because I couldn't do anything else.
Mm.
But that allowed me the opportunity. When I got up and was able to sit up in bed and get on my laptop, the book was just about written.
Ah.
So that was perfect. So that was the first part. I was laid up. And then the second miracle was I was laid off. A few months after that, when I'd completed the book, and I really didn't know what I'd do with it, my whole unit was laid off. And so I had some months of severance, and I thought, well, what the heck? I might as well see if I can get it published. Now, of course, I was totally naive. I didn't know all those statistics about first-time authors can't get agents, can't get published. I just kind of jumped in and did it. So within, like, 2 months, I found an agent, and within another month, actually the first week that she put it out, we had sold the first book. So, you know, it was a series of miracles and circumstances, and the only thing I can credit me for is stepping forward. That's it. Just taking the next step.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, and your first book was titled?
It's Never Too Late to Get a Life.
Ah. Now, this couldn't have had anything to do with your life, could it?
No, Ken. No. It's about everybody else. It's never about us. No, it absolutely had. Well, actually, the book is not. The character is not me, exactly. And the situations aren't mine exactly or anything. A lot of it comes from life. But I do have to say that I was at the point where I needed to get a life. You know, I was on this treadmill of working too hard and losing friends, not losing them, but not seeing them, not appreciating them, not having fun, stressing out. Yeah, I really needed to get life.
Mm.
It is not autobiographical.
Okay.
Despite what my mother might tell you.
Okay, so we'll be able to reference her. I don't know if you've had have a portion on your website, which is heathereesta.com, where you could have a place where your mother refutes everything.
Oh, she would. She would. She
which would be perfect, as apparently that's a lot of mothers' jobs.
A mother's job. And my mother has an excellent memory, meaning that she remembers exactly what she wants to remember and how she wants to remember it. And isn't that an excellent memory?
That is.
Why would you want a photographic memory when you could have one like my mother's?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway. So I'll give you your phone number later, Ken.
You have done two more books,
mm-hmm.
if I'm understanding correctly. And can you give us a quickie overview of the three books that we could go to your website to get these books, or Amazon,
exactly.
I'm guessing, also.
Exactly. You can. Well, the books are about, they're basically about friendships. They're about kind of the pratfalls downfalls and pitfalls of reinventing yourself in middle age. The main character gets dumped by her husband after 26 years of marriage, and her wacky friends decide that she needs to start dating again and get a life. So it's really about stumbling through all of that and kind of the friendships that happen, the people that help us along the way.
Okay. Well, that's good. And so that theme goes through each of the books.
Through each of the books. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so it's never too late to get a life. And then the second is?
It's never too late to be a bridesmaid.
Oh.
And it's never too late to look hot. It was the last one.
Never too late to look hot.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now we want to figure out, because here's this large mass of people, this baby boomers.
Oh, yes.
That you're a part of the group, and
mm-hmm.
and you've taken a big step forward in terms of expressing yourself and finding that you could reinvent yourself and your life. And so what I'm wondering, of course, is what insights can you share? So, for instance, there's some stuff about romance, some comments. After all, you know, many people have heard of romance, and some are even willing to try it.
Remember it.
Yeah.
Way back when. They've seen the movie, right?
Exactly.
So, well, change is about a lot of things. And I think that the thing with us baby boomers that we have to realize is that we're going to be living a heck of a lot longer than previous generations. You know, they are saying, I was looking at stats from the Stanford Longevity Institute, and we're supposed to be living into our hundreds now. And the head of that institute had a really interesting question. She said, so you're getting an extra 30 years. Where do you want to put them? In other words, do you want to tack 30 extra years on your decrepit, old, moldy stage of life? Or do you want to put those 30 years into the middle kind of vibrant stage of life? And it's just a different way to think about things. So as baby boomers, that's the first thing we have to realize is we're going to be around a heck of a lot longer. I think we also have the attitude that we're not going to go gently into that good night. You know, we're the generation that thought we were cool, and we still think we're cool. Our children don't think we're cool. Other people don't think we're cool, but we still think we're cool. We refuse to give that up. Whereas in prior generations, I think they were willing. They got to a certain age and they're willing to give it up. We just won't.
Ah, this the old saying about growing old gracefully.
Yes, no, we're not graceful. We're kind of going in there rocking and thinking that we still can dance and, you know, all of those things. So, but in change, so we do have to change. Maybe generations previously could just kind of slide into old age and expire, and that was it. But we're going to be around for a long time, so we will have changes thrust upon us. And to enjoy our life, I really think we do need to change. One of my rules of thumb in life is if you don't embarrass yourself periodically, you're just not stretching far enough.
Now, of course, we wouldn't want you to mention any of the embarrassing things you've done, but maybe you
maybe
can,
I could.
But just in case.
Well, I've done a lot of embarrassing things, but the overall philosophy that I have is, you know, they keep saying embrace your inner child.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we can do that, Ken, because the inner child is not self-conscious. They don't feel awkward. They don't feel gawky. They just kind of go out and they try things and they fall on their face. They really don't care. It's that inner 13-year-old that we need to embrace.
Oh.
The one that doesn't want to look incompetent with anything.
Incontinent either.
Or incontinent. Well, you know, we have depends. We have things we can do about that.
Okay, good.
Yes. In fact, on my website, Ken, if you need a reference, I could.
Folks, we got to go to see Heather's website, heatherestay.com, for lots of good resources.
Yes. But I was looking up quotes the other day, and there's some Greek philosopher, Epictetus or something, I can't remember his name, but the quote was something like, life is made smaller by fear of looking incompetent.
Ah.
And I firmly believe that. So here we are at middle age,
yes.
And we're not only are we cool, but we're competent. you know, we've gotten to a certain level in our careers, we've raised families, we've done the thing, and we're being very confident. The thing that we have to do to enliven our lives, I think, is allow ourselves to be incompetent.
Mm.
So the way we do that is try something new that we've never done before.
Yes. Well, you mentioned a desire to participate in nuclear physics.
Actually, no.
No, just kidding.
I can barely pronounce it, Ken. That's when that comes up, that subject comes up, I have a really good nod and smile routine I do.
Yeah.
Very silent.
Okay. So it's not so much about things that are way over our heads, but are you inviting us to stretch a little and do some fun things that we've postponed?
Yeah. Well, like last fall, and so it doesn't have to be serious stuff, and it can be serious stuff.
So
I tried the writing. I had never written a book before. I've never taken a writing class. I have absolutely no credentials to do it. I tried that. But I also, last fall, I took up aerobic belly dancing.
Ah.
Ah, I bet you've been pining to do that, Ken.
Well, I didn't want to admit it until now, but thanks to you, I'll come out of the closet.
It was very fun. You know, a little shocking because the lady makes you expose your belly, and you have a full-length mirror, and so for 2 hours you're looking at your belly in the mirror, and then there's all these rhythmic things. You have to get your fingers moving and your belly moving and your feet moving, and none of mine moved as she wanted them to move, but it was just so much fun to do something. I took up kayaking last summer, tried that out. I took up, I had not sung since I was in high school, and I loved to sing in choirs, and I was a first soprano, and about 4 years ago, I was sort of conned into joining my church choir, and I started singing, and my voice wasn't as I remembered it. I took some voice lessons, I started singing, and now I'm singing, you know, backups, and I'm singing in smaller groups, and I even conducted our choir last Sunday.
Ah.
Just totally, but what it required was for me to step in to the choir, listen to myself, be embarrassed that I didn't have the voice I remembered, do a little something about it, and hang in with it. And I am having so much fun with it. It's one of my favorite things. So I think it's that. Oh, I also took up golf. Talk about the ultimate embarrassment. I mean, golf is made to embarrass you. I'm sure of that. But I think, you know, in any of these things, and those are just examples, everybody's got their own things that they could try. A question I always love is, when was the last time you tried something for the very first time? I ask myself that periodically. But again, I think that the real key is allowing yourself to step into something where you might get a little embarrassed, you're going to be incompetent, you don't know what the heck is going on, you don't know, you're stepping out of your known world into something that's unknown, and you take yourself lightly as you do it.
Now, I'm just wondering, it sounds fabulous to me, the idea of venturing out to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Many people listen and they think, okay, you know, she did that, but I don't think I could, or this, that, or the other. There's something getting in their way.
Right.
And I'm just wondering what you might help with some thoughts or advice about when a person's a little stuck.
Well, you know, one of the things, and this is going to be very controversial, so hang on.
Uh-huh.
One of the things that can really leave us stuck are our best friends. Sometimes our best friends, when we're trying to change and kind of step out, some of our best friends, because they love us and they fear for our safety and they don't want us to be humiliated, they help us stay stuck. And for some of them, they'd almost prefer that we stay stuck because they know who we are. They don't know who we're becoming. So sometimes you need to ignore the advice of your best friends to step out. And sometimes, and this is the hard part, sometimes you need to find new friends.
Mm.
And that's a little rough. But I would say that if you have friends who are always saying, oh, you don't want to do that, or that's just too much, or only younger people do that, or only people with skills can do that, or you'll never succeed. Statistically, it's impossible. If you've got friends that are saying that a lot to you, you might want to move away and find some others that are exploring also.
And suggestions for helping to build a new friendship circle? What thoughts do you have about that?
Well, you know, there are all kinds of different communities that I think are good. You know, some are spiritual communities, but then some spiritual communities are confining. Some are hobby communities, but then some hobby communities are confining. I think it's just kind of feeling your way through and having that openness. Starting new friendships is a period where sometimes you have to get over your inner 13-year-old self-consciousness also. But I think there are a lot of us out there, Ken, who are looking to expand, looking for a little bit more, looking to have fun, looking to change, willing to change. I think there are a lot of people out there.
Okay, so different things. I've recently taken up drumming, I think is just
cool.
A lot of fun.
How very cool.
Oh, yeah.
Now, is this drumming like the American Indian drumming, or is it drumming like for a band, or what kind of drumming?
Well, this one happens to, I'm the... have a favorite, a djembe, and so I'm learning some different rhythms, and there's monthly drum circles at one church, and there's weekly gatherings at a bookstore, so that's one of the things.
That is too cool. That is very fun. So when you've gone drumming, do you feel a little bit more vibrant?
Oh, yeah, just a chance to express, to move some energy,
and to
begin to build rhythms and coordinations.
Mm-hmm. And it probably just goes through your whole system, through your, like, your mind's excited, and your heart's excited, and your body's excited. Oh, yeah,
and I'm particularly enjoying this one group, because they'll introduce a rhythm by aligning it with a positive phrase.
Oh, okay.
So the person might say, I am powerful now. I am powerful now.
How
and
wonderful.
Then we just use that as a way to help keep in the rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting positive phrasing and then trying out different rhythms and switching drums.
Wonderful.
Yeah, so that would be, at least for me, one example of trying something new and going out there and making new friends.
And doing the whole thing. And you probably did not feel totally confident the first time you hit the drum.
And some of the time I didn't make the right sound or, you know, that kind of thing. And it was just nice because no one cared.
Nobody cared.
No.
Nobody really. You know, that is one thing that we should have learned by our age. Is that I remember when I was a teenager and taking some class with a teacher who taught leaders, high school leaders, and I remember him saying that you always think that everybody's looking at you when you walk into a room, a classroom, which of course we all did. We all thought everybody was looking just at us, and he said, nobody cares. They're so uncomfortable and self-conscious about themselves. Nobody's looking at you. Nobody cares. And that really hit home with me. And at least by this age, I think we should know that other people, what is it Dr. Seuss says, is the people who matter won't mind, and the people who mind don't matter. That's a Dr. Seuss quote. I have it backwards, but the truth is, most people don't, they're not paying attention to you hitting the drum wrong. They're worried about them hitting it correctly. So, you know, all of our self-consciousness, we just don't need it.
Exactly, exactly. And our listeners out there, if you have any comments about your process or questions for Heather, our phone number in the U.S., 877-876-5227, U.S. and Canada line, 888-815-9756, and for those out of either of those areas, 530-876-3222, and we are here talking with Heather Astai, who is helping us to remember that it's never too late to get alive. It's never too late to get looking hot. It's just never too late to go out and rediscover ourselves. And that's the theme that she is doing with her wonderful books. Into the world of dating. I'm wondering if you have some comments about, is dating after 40 different than dating at earlier ages, and how so?
Well, there are a number of ways. First of all, at this age, we're a little bit more formed. You know, rather than being loose and exploring different kinds of people, most of us have this huge list of criteria that's really pretty specific. You know, it used to be if the guy looked good in jeans, that was fine. Give him a shot. That's it. But now, you know, I talk to my friends, and they want to make sure he's got a good credit rating and his 401k is in order and that he likes the right kind of wine and sleeps on the side of the bed that would be preferable. I mean, it gets really tight. And even loosening up, we still have a lot more criteria going for this kind of thing. The other thing is that, frankly, most of us can't stay up as late as we used to. So we used to date, you know, late at night when there was candlelight when we were younger and we looked really good. And now we're at, you know, in the restaurant for the senior citizen specials at 5 o'clock and it's got the fluorescent lights on and it's just really, it's rough. I'm just telling you, it's rough. But there are, you know, for a lot of us, there are a lot of different things. I think when, you know, kids are hooking up now, they just kind of hook up and I'm not exactly sure what that means.
Yeah, they hook up and they hang out.
Hook up, hang out. They're much more casual. So we know about that, but we never dated that way. So we don't quite know how to do it. You know, we don't know if it's the flowers thing or if we both pay or, I mean, our rules are just all out the window. So it's a little bit, again, it's that embarrassment thing. It's a having to step into it when we don't quite know the rules anymore, whereas we used to know the rules. So those are some of the ways that it's, you know, a little bit different than it used to be.
Hmm. Okay. Okay. And any suggestions that you or your characters in your book might share with us?
Well, there are a couple things. You know, first of all, there's some do's and don'ts of dating over 40 that you never would have thought of earlier. For men, you know, frankly, guys, most of you have more hair coming out of your ears than growing on your head anymore. So you need to kind of get with your nose hair trimmers, and you need to handle that. You know, that's really important. And for women, we need to learn to flirt again. We've been in business for so long that we go out on dates, and it's more like a hiring interview. You know, you're getting quizzed and everything. We need to learn to flirt and to lighten up a little bit and remember that it's, you know, it's for fun, it's for tonight, it's not forever, it's not so serious. We need to take ourselves a lot less seriously.
Mm.
And one of the absolute don'ts in dating over 40 is never under any circumstances compliment your date's facelift. And I say that from a friend's personal experience where she actually went out with a man who complimented her on a facelift that she'd never had.
Oh.
He asked about the surgeon. He went on and on. It was her one and only date with him. Yeah.
But he's gone on to get a lot of plastic surgery, I hope.
I hope he has. And he's gotten compliments on it.
Yes.
One of the benefits that we do have being over 40 is that we can date younger people. You know, when you're 16, it's really hard to date anybody who's much younger. But when you're 40 or you're 50 or you're 60, in fact, there's some statistic that something like 40% of all women over 40 are dating younger men.
Ah.
I've got to believe that that includes all those 92-year-old ladies who are dating those 88-year-old guys.
Ah.
You know, so maybe it's not that significant. But I think when you date people who are out of your age range, you kind of have to come up with a criteria for yourself. So, like, mine is if I could have changed his diapers. He's too young for me. If he needs help changing his Depends, he's too old for me.
Ah.
So that's my kind of broad range.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right,
yes.
So we've got a couple of major criteria there.
Major criteria. a friend of mine was telling me he dated a young woman who didn't know that Paul McCartney had a band before Wings.
Ah.
And he's my age. And so that was kind of out of his age range. So you have to figure out some criteria, but at least we have the option to date younger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the age thing is of less significance.
Yep.
But more, just I guess I don't know what you'd call it, compatibility criteria
right.
For people enjoying each other's company.
Mm-hmm. I was just with some friends of mine, and he is 20-some-odd years older than she is. And a more compatible couple I don't know that I've ever met. And I think the key with them, they've been married for quite a while now, the key with them is both of them would say that they got the best end of the deal. You know, that she really had made a great catch with him by catching him, and he made a great catch by catching her, and they both feel like they're so lucky. They're the lucky one in the couple. And I think that is really sweet, and it's also, it just says something about their compatibility. But their age thing has nothing to do with anything.
Well, good.
Mm-hmm.
That opens up some doors for people to just find out what makes them happy.
Sure.
And then connect with people who can share that with each other.
Exactly. Now, it may be, for a lot of people, when I have talked to them about dating, they're not really looking for a person. They may be better off with a dog.
Now, how do we know if you're better off with a dog than a mate?
Okay, I have a little true-false quiz.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you can take it as a male, Ken, first. So are you looking for a female who is thrilled to see you no matter how late you are or where you've been? A female who never says, what did you really mean by that? A female who's delighted to hang out on the couch with you through all of football season? A female who thinks you smell great whether you've showered or not? A female who doesn't flip out if you forget her birthday, Valentine's, or the anniversary of your first date? Now, if you said, depending on how you answered that, you're either looking for a female person or a golden retriever.
Ah.
Because a golden retriever doesn't care how you smell, will hang out with you, doesn't care about her birthday. Most human females do. And the thing about getting a dog is a dog won't make you change. You know, a dog will let you continue your life. You don't have to compromise or change in any way. A mate will. When you hook up with a human being,
mm-hmm.
there will be some compromise. There will be some changes you have to go through. So one of the first things you need to ask yourself is, do I want that? Do I want that growth and change? I have two beagles, if that gives you any clue of...
Sure. Yeah. And, you know, and what are you giving up and what are you gaining?
Exactly. Exactly.
So you may have some small lifestyle changes,
mm-hmm.
but... What if the sex just curls your toes?
That's right. That's right. What if it does? And how do you test that out?
Yeah, and what do you explain to your golden retriever?
When they have to move over the eagles. I mean, it gets crowded. It can get very, very crowded. Well, there's this whole thing of dating that, you know, is really rough. Because I think for a lot of us, we're not interested in dating per se. I know very few people who are interested in the dating thing itself. They're looking to find a compatible person. But somehow we've figured that we have to go out on these dates, and most of them are about as revealing as that essay portion in the Miss America pageant. You know, where you really don't hear anything about the person.
No.
So I've got this idea
okay. That
nobody believes, Ken. So I'm going to try it one more time, because nobody will buy this, that we should have kind of speed reality dates, and that's what we should do.
Okay, so describe a little bit of a speed reality date.
Well, for instance, you know, the perfect one is really a round of golf for golfers. Are you a golfer?
I did one round and felt good that I didn't hurt anybody.
Good for you. Good, and you didn't get sued or anything.
No.
No. Well, that doesn't quite make you a golfer yet, Ken. But you're on a roll.
Okay, and I felt good that almost no matter where I was on the course, I could get my balls in the water.
Well, you know, that is a skill. And you could expand that to get your balls in the water or a bunker.
Oh,
you know,
I missed out on some bunkers.
Well, your next round, I'm sure you could do that. Well,
yeah, someone told me avoid the green no matter what.
Yeah, and you did it.
Oh,
you're a hero. You're really a hero. Well, the thing about golf is that for anybody who's played even once, is that it really reveals a lot of character.
Oh.
It does. You can learn more in, I would say, 6 holes, but if you're a beginning golfer, 18 holes about a person than you can in 20 years. You find out if they're honest. You find out how they are under stress, how they deal with people as they're trying to concentrate, you know, whether they yell at themselves or get down on themselves. I mean, you just learn so much about them, whether they can laugh at themselves when they hit the ball in the water, or somebody else's ball in the water, as I have done. You know, you just learn a heck of a lot in a round of golf. But, okay, but not everybody plays golf. So I came up with another one that is shop for a sofa together.
Oh.
You know, get together and go shopping as if you're going to buy a sofa. And you'll find out all kinds of things. You know, you'll find out that she thinks that pink is a neutral color.
Hmm.
You'll find out that she needs a really big couch because she always invites her whole family over for American Idol every, what is it, on Friday nights, whatever night it's on.
Okay.
You know, you'll find out that he wants the Barca Lounger part because he's going to be sitting there watching TV during the football season, and so he needs to be relaxed. You know, you'll find out all kinds of, seriously, you'll find, I swear, if I had gone sofa shopping with my ex-husband before we married, we wouldn't have.
Ah.
Oh, so I think that's a real viable one. Now, another one that I like is the driving 5 hours date. This is one where you get in a car and you have no radio and no heat or air conditioning, depending on the season, and no directions.
No directions.
I mean, just imagine that.
Yeah.
5 hours. Wouldn't you learn everything you ever needed to know about somebody?
Yeah.
5 hours. See? This could save you a lot of time and mascara and aftershave and, you know, all those things.
Yeah, plus it takes all the pressure off of planning for the event.
That's right, because there's no planning. There's just trying to keep yourself calm. Actually, my favorite one is the Monday morning date. And nobody has bought this yet, so I'm going to try this out on you, Ken, all right? Monday morning date. So this is not a Monday morning after the Sunday night before. In other words, you weren't together the night before, but you show up at her door with your shaving kit and your clothes and everything, bright and early Monday morning, and you both cram into the bathroom and try to get ready for work together. Now, Ken, if you did that on a first date, if you made it through that first date,
yes,
you definitely have a winner, right?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, when you can get along in the bathroom,
right.
when you're rushing to get to work.
There you go. I wouldn't try it on a day when you have to catch a plane or, you know, really give a presentation. I wouldn't try it then. That's a little too stressful.
You want to have at least a little room there for some interesting things to come up.
A little give there. But I would love it if some of your audience ever does that Monday morning date. I would love to hear the results of that one.
Yeah. Now, have you experimented with, like, the drive, just a random, you know, get-together and figure it all out?
You know, it wasn't intentional, but I definitely did have a date like that. And seriously, it was so revealing. It was really so very, very revealing that we didn't need, I think it was a third date or something when that happened. And, that handled it.
Can you share a little bit of some of your discoveries?
Well, I can't share his language over the air. That would be rude. I mean, he got pretty excited. And, of course, I was stuck in the car and couldn't talk him out of it. And, you know, there was a lot of, it was the classic, he wouldn't ask for directions. And if I made suggestions, he didn't trust him. I mean, it was pretty dramatic. I don't remember that I got fed at the end of the date either.
His
when
wife?
We finally got there, I don't remember that I got fed after that. But no. But that's the only one that I've and unintentionally tried. But the other ones, I swear, would work.
Yeah.
To a foreign country where neither of you speak the language, that's a good one. Might be a little expensive.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, we're close to Mexico.
That's true.
For many of us, and you know, and you're there in southern, well, I guess Central California, but
close enough. We could do something.
Yeah,
we could confuse ourselves. But I think that, you know, the point, of course, of all those dates would be to put yourself under some kind of real life, slightly pressured situation, where you really get to experience each other, as opposed to just going out to dinner and everybody smells good and looks good and they're on their best behavior and we're not in each other's space or in each other's way or really, really discussing anything. You know, those are fun dates. But if you're really looking to determine if somebody's mate material or even continue dating material, I think some of these are a little more realistic.
Ah, okay. Well, I like that, of any of them, that thing of inviting someone out to do some furniture shopping.
There you go.
So it kind of gives you an opportunity to check in on taste and what it's like in their shopping decorum.
Exactly. You have the clerks and how they do. Now, you don't actually have to keep buying sofas, Ken. Every time you do this, you don't have to buy another sofa. When you do, you just shop for it. I just want to clarify that.
I was going to say, right now I've got three extra sofas in the garage from times that I've done this. I think I should cut back on the sofas?
I think perhaps you could, but who am I to say?
People come over to when the weather's nice here in Denver and just want to sit in the garage on a sofa.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, now, how can you kind of tell when a person is really ready to get back into the swing for this romance and to just go for it?
You know, really, all you need to do is open up your underwear drawer.
Okay.
In the underwear drawer. I mean, that's it. So for the ladies, you know, if we look in our underwear drawers and we pull out these panties that look like something, Granny would love these panties. They'd be so comfy for her. Then we're just not ready for romance. We're not serious about it. And for you guys, if you pull out those boxer shorts and you say, you know, I bet you I could wear these a couple more times before I use them to clean the car. You're just not thinking romance. And it's not about showing people your underwear. It's not like you're going to go out dating and show everybody your underwear. It's kind of how sexy and romantic you feel.
Wow, okay. So maybe that wasn't good because I had people on dates, they'd show, you know, pictures of pets or children, and I had pictures of underwear.
Did you? Well,
no, but it sounds like a fun thing.
Hopefully it was your better underwear, Ken.
That was the deal.
Yeah,
okay. You don't want to show the ones with the holes in it?
No.
Okay.
No, but it really does say something about, and even your wardrobe, it kind of says something about how romantic you feel. You know, that looking hot thing.
Yes.
Is it really about looking hot? It's about feeling hot. It's about channeling Mae West or Cary Grant or whoever is your romantic idol, you know, whoever you think is really sexy and romantic.
Mm-hmm.
That's what looking hot's about. It's about a feeling about yourself. It's about feeling not like Granny or Grandpa, not feeling like Mom or Dad, or not feeling like a boss or secretary. It's about feeling yourself with, again, like Susan Sarandon or Kathleen Turner or whatever it is, as opposed to Sandra Day O'Connor. You know, you want an image that makes you feel.
Or Susan B. Anthony.
Yeah, or Susan B. Anthony. I mean, nice ladies, but I wouldn't say that they were the top of the sexy thing. So that's
important. Is kind of like our wish list, in a way, that window shopping for this mood.
Yeah, exactly.
What gets you in the mood?
What gets you in the mood and makes you feel that it's not just them who are romantic and sexy, but you can feel it in yourself. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's like, whether it's Steve McQueen or Errol Flynn, Cary Grant.
Yeah, oh, now you got it. You're going.
Oh.
You're going. Now, I wouldn't suggest necessarily that you show up with the cape and the hat and the whole thing on your first date, but to have that feeling
like
Errol Flynn, you know, just, yeah.
Okay,
so
you want to be able to distinguish between the costume and the inner feeling.
Exactly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, frankly, I think a lot of us have kind of, and we blame everything on the media because it's so easy, you know, to make them the bad guys. But a lot of us have gotten into thinking more about the outer, how I can look sexy or better, than the inner feeling of it. So we get into all this plastic surgery and get hair implants and we do all this stuff when really I think very little of that is necessary and very little of that works. Because if you don't feel that way on the inside, no matter how many, you know, chin lifts or whatever they do you have, how many injections of Botox, you're still not going to feel that way. So if you know, I have nothing against people doing facelifts and, well, the Botox I do have something against because it's botulism, Ken. Yes, it's botulism.
Ah.
You don't know that?
Wow, so someone's getting my share?
Yeah. of a toxic substance. Yes. It your
where do I send him a thank you note?
You know, I got to believe in 30 years from now, when, yeah, you know, a whole bunch of us have eyebrows that are permanently frozen, like you're saying, we're going to say, what were we thinking? What were we thinking when we injected this? Anyway, but seriously, yeah, I don't have anything against people doing stuff like that, but I just think that it falls short if you don't have that internal feeling,
yeah,
of feeling hot. And it may take some convincing, or, you know, some friends convincing you or something, but I think that's the key.
Okay. Now, I'm just curious, because I still have to get more familiar with your books.
Okay.
But I'm just wondering if male and female, more towards women, more towards men, you know, because of the themes here, you know,
mm-hmm,
looking hot,
I know.
You know, are you covering both genders?
Actually, yes. I have, you know, the covers are kind of girly covers.
Mm-hmm.
The publisher always figures that stuff out, but they're kind of girly. But I have a lot of men who read my books, and what they say about them, Ken, which I really like, is that they feel like they learn a lot about the female psyche without the male bashing.
Mm.
And they do, because I checked out for my male characters when I had them do things. I did check out with my male buddies to make sure that they were true to form too, that I wasn't making up stuff from them about them that wouldn't ring true to them. So actually, I think you may have to put it in a brown cover to read it. There was one, the husband of my veterinarian was reading it. The first one he read in, she went home. I'd given her a book, and she put it by the bedside, and she couldn't find it the next morning. And her husband's in the bathroom, and she knocks, and he's still in the bathroom. And she gets dressed. He's still in the bathroom. She has breakfast. He's still in the bathroom. So she pounds on the door, and he's in there. He's reading my book in the bathroom because he's embarrassed to be reading it, you know, when his 13-year-old son might see. Well, he enjoyed it so much that now he reads it reads them in the living room. He's progressed from it. Yeah.
Okay, so he's actually willing to come out of the bathroom with your book.
Absolutely.
But, now that's a sign of progress, I would think.
I think that's a sign of progress. But I do have a lot of guys who read the book.
Well, good.
Mean characters are all female.
Well, that's that to me. That I wanted to. That was the essence that I was getting. Is that this was, you know, people not only getting some humor by reading, because your style, just conversationally, has got a lot of wit and good humor to it. But there's this opportunity in exploring the fun with your characters to actually be inspired to move our lives ahead.
That's what I've heard. That's what I hear from people, and I love that. I also have heard from people the comment of, after seeing the friendships in the book, of them thinking about their own friendships and appreciating some of them and wanting to get more of them and wanting to be better friends and, you know, just recognizing the importance of that for when you're going through critical times. I would say there are a couple of ingredients that we need through life, and one of them really is good friends.
Mm-hmm.
And not just one good friend. I would say that, and the reason I say that is because, and this is the rough part, but people die. So you have one good friend, or, you know, your perfect mate, and you're tied, just the two of you together. To me, that's not enough. You need some friends. You need a broader community of people that you really relate to and enjoy and who cheer you on and pull you back when you're about to leap over the cliff and those types of things. That's, that's pretty critical.
Yeah. Now, did you continue as you changed careers, or did you bring a bunch of new people into your friendship circle?
You know, I have friends, I have all kinds of different friends. In fact, the first time that many of them got together was a couple years ago when my sisters and my mom showed up. And my mom hadn't traveled for years, and this was a special occasion, so they were here. So I invited all my female friends to come gather, and they're so different. You know, I have my intellectual PhD in epidemiology friend. I have my jock golfing buddy. I have my bank president friend. I have my manicurist friend. I mean, just all different perspectives on life, maybe education levels, but just they're just so diverse, and they had such a good time together. It was very fun. But but they're from all different types, parts of my life, and probably reflect different parts of me. So when I'm with my intellectual friend, you know, we can talk philosophy. I don't remember any of the Greek philosophers' names, but she can talk philosophy, and I can follow along. And you know, or my golf buddies, we can just yak and laugh. And there are different parts of myself that come out in those friends. So I've kept friends through different times of my life. And, of course, some people who are not real friends, who are merely acquaintances, those kind of fall by the wayside when you shift careers and shift lives. But the real friends stick around.
Well, that's important. Mm-hmm. Now, so as we're aging, any other helpful hints on things that you find very important?
Well, you know, for me that, maybe it's just me, Kim, but that sense of humor and enjoying life is just critical. You know, if you were so careful about your finances and had your 401ks in place and were making megabucks, and I still don't think that your life would be as satisfactory as if you just really enjoyed what life you have and got as much out of it as you can. And for me, that includes humor. You know, I need to laugh a lot. So that seems, I was traveling for business years ago, and the plane was stopping off in Las Vegas. This lady got on, she was 150 years old, I swear, and she had her hair all dolled up, and she had long red fingernails and all these jewels, and she had a silver lamé jumpsuit on, and around her she had some kind of back brace, you know, holding her up, but this cute little silver lamé tint, and she was having the time of her life. She was going to, it was 10 in the morning, she ordered a Bloody Mary, and she flirted with the steward, and she did all that. She was just having a ball. And I thought, that's exactly how I want to grow up. Having a ball, just really having fun. And I think if we can remember that and not wait to have fun until, you know, we get through this job or we retire or the kids grow up and go away or the something, but that we get that kind of joy and enjoyment now. For me, that's a key to aging, not gracefully, but joyfully.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm. Joyfully. Whether you're graceful or not, you may fall over a few times, but so what? You're having a good time doing it.
Yeah. And then there's the having something that you feel excited about in life or that you feel dedicated to. You know, some people, they feel dedicated to something or they believe in something or they are excited about something. Anything in that general category. If you have something like that, I think you're way ahead of the game. And for many of us, it takes finding something.
So, like for yourself, would you share a couple of things?
Well, you know, one of the things that I am most inspired by has to do with interfaith spirituality. I love learning about all kinds of different faiths and respecting all kinds of different faiths and kind of one God, many paths. You know, that's just close to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that. So that inspires me. Singing and being around good people, that inspires me. I now also, besides writing the novels, I do some freelance writing. And I help people who have great messages, you know, all kinds of different types of people, you know, wine experts and performance psychologists and HUNA masters and, you know, all these different people. And that, to me, is so exciting, to help people like that get their message across. It's just, it's very
fun. Well, I want to talk to you further about that.
Okay.
Geez, Heather, this is just the time has blazed right by. Just been so inspired by your sense of humor and your inspiration for how to be more active in life as we age and to really make it powerfully good for our lives, not just getting by, but like you say, it's never too late to look hot, to get alive, to be a bridesmaid, to get your off the couch.
Right, to learn drumming.
Yes.
To learn to hit a golf ball in the water.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Well, this is important, and I thank you and invite my listeners to visit your website, Heather, HEATHERESTAY.com, get your books and get your life just more active and more joyful. And Heather, you've shown us a pathway. I want to thank you for taking time to be here and to make this such a pleasure.
Great. Well, thank you, Kim. This has been very fun.
You're welcome, and wish you a blessed week, and to all my listeners a blessed week, and tune in next week as we'll have more fun and adventure on Advanced Living Radio. Until then, God bless, and goodbye.
Let go of it, God. Let myself do. Still let go of it. Let it go. Let it go. Let go of it. Se levanta con el sueño en los ojos. Y el fresco olor de la mañana que aún no nació. Hay una barca en el puerto que le espera. Que como siempre en sus sueños, él la besó. Él la saluda desde su ventana. Ella lo entiende como nadie más. Fueron muchas las horas que pasaron juntos. Y muchos los apuros en alta mar. Y cuentan que no saben lo que es el miedo. Dicen que sale, que no importa cómo esté la mar. Juran que goza luchando con la sola. Y que con ella a su lado todo le da igual. Hay quien le espera al caer la tarde. Muchos hay que dudan si volverá. Ya regresaron con sus barcas vacías. Y nadie lo ha visto. Está mal a la mar. Y el viento sopla más que de costumbre. Las olas cubren su embarcación. Ya queda poco, se asoma por el puerto. Y lo ven sonriendo junto al timón. Sí, cuentan que no saben lo que es el miedo. Dicen que sale, que no importa cómo esté la mar.
gran que goza luchando con la soledad, y que con ella a su lado todo le da igual. Y cuenta que él no sabe lo que es el miedo, y dicen que sale, que no importa cómo esté la mamá. Juran que goza luchando con la soledad, y que con Emma a su lado todo le da igual, todo le da igual.